One to Right to the Source. We're on episode 8. I'm Robin Harrison, and as ever, I'm here with Mr. Ed Birkin, Managing Director of H2 Gambling Capital. He's here with his big mic, his banner, which marks him out as the most trusted, underlined, data and intelligence on the global gaming industry. Ed, devil are you today?
I am well, Robin, and it's lovely to see those reading lessons have paid off, and you're showing off about it on the podcast, so congratulations. It does actually say gambling, not gaming, but hey, you know, when you're in the industry, what's a B and an L got to do with anything?
Well, this is it. I mean, it's, you know, it's almost interchangeable at this point.
Well, it is and it isn't, actually, because I was actually having this conversation with a client who wants to have a report that just everything says gaming, the gaming industry. So you have tables saying this is the size of online gaming. And it's like, well, it's the size of online gaming you're calling it, because you don't say gambling, because that may be perceived as a bad word. But it's actually betting, gaming and lotteries. So then when you're actually showing just the gaming section, you have the same title of online gaming, but it's not. That's just gaming. And it's just so confusing. So I think it's a US thing, isn't it, where they've always called it gaming and now maybe betting.
I mean, I think it's been about in Europe as well. And to be honest, I do actually have a galaxy brain take on this thing, because I think it kind of lends itself to the fact that it's almost reflecting an element of shame in the industry. They don't want to just say gambling. They want to say gaming. They want to kind of lighten it. They don't want to talk about what it is, which I think is a great shame. You know, this is a fantastic industry. I feel it's like of all a lot of emerging industries and kind of like new technologies, it's one that's very meritocratic. You know, and obviously this is all going to be on display next week at XL London when IGB Live makes its debut in the cap.
Well. Good. I mean, I'm glad we got 2 minutes in before we've started talking about anything we said we were going to talk about, because you weren't going to read my slogan. I wasn't going to take the piss that you couldn't say the word gaming or gambling. And we definitely had not even discussed a little segue into whether the industry should be embarrassed about calling it gambling. But no, we are going to talk about IGB Live. And after the success of our guest on the last podcast, you told me you have someone, the director of events from IGB Live, coming on to give us a rundown of the product. So I look forward to you admitting him into the podcast.
Well, unfortunately, and thanks for bringing that up, I was going to invite our senior conference producer, Damien Ashton-Wellman, but he's a bit under the weather. He's been travelling a lot for work recently, and the way he put it is he sounds like Gollum. So he is not going to join us today, but we're going to get him on. I think when would be good to get him on is maybe kind of towards September, October, around when he's starting to put together the ICE agenda. You know, when it's starting to kind of firm up, because I think it'll be really interesting to get that kind of contrast from around that kind of early stage when speaker recruitment's starting, when he's got the core themes, to maybe like a few weeks out from the show, what it looks like at that point. So we will have Damien on. We're sorry he can't be here today, but we can still talk about IGB Live. I mean, I think
Robin, you can be my guest today. How about that? I'll show you what a good interview is like, because I've never been to IGB Live.
Haven't you?
Well, it's a small show that no one knows anything about. But apparently it's not a small show. It's the biggest one in London. 15,000 people.
Yep, 15,000 people. It was a huge show in Amsterdam. Don't listen to this clown who's never been to the show before.
I've done my research as an interviewer. I'm going to show you how to interview someone. So you just sit there and answer my question.
Okay.
So, Robin, welcome on the show. We're going to talk about IGB Live here, the biggest gaming show in London, iGaming show, now that ICE has moved. 15,000 attendees expected, 11 networking events, I believe, 2 different IGB exec events. We have the LATAM Media Group sponsored football competition on the Friday, which I am participating in. But please, how about we start with what's the main difference between IGB Live and ICE? I mean, you can't have two. And congratulations on ICE winning the best international trade show of any industry, I believe it was last week. So congratulations to the Clarion team there.
But yeah, the Clarion team.
How's it differ to ICE?
Okay, well, first of all, just on the AEO awards, 2 awards won, obviously a massive, badge of honour for the Live team, because you think about, you know, it wasn't so much, much just ICE. It was World Gaming Week. It was ICE. It was IGB affiliate. It was in a new city. And one of the things that really kind of came out of ICE, I mean, someone at the event said to me, it doesn't feel like this is the first year of the show after a move, which I think is just kind of like a testament to the amount of work that went into it. I mean, obviously I work in the digital side of the business, so I'm not directly involved in a lot of the event stuff, but very happy to tell you how it differs. ICE is obviously an omni-channel agenda setting show. So it's really pulling in the C-suite, the regulators, land base, the online, all facets of the gaming industry. And then obviously its sister show, sharing the FIRA in Barcelona, is IGB Affiliate, which is for the affiliate programs and content developed for that affiliate community. So IGB Live is slightly different in that it's online focused, and it's really an event that's more kind of centered around operational excellence. You know, ICE is kind of like setting out the kind of year, you know, the key themes of the year for the industry, whereas IGB Live is kind of like refining your approach to your kind of, you know, functional expertise, you know, so it's looking kind of, is good. That's really what the kind of difference is. And obviously it was in Amsterdam for years. Last year, I remember the event honestly, it was crazy. It was like the venue, the Rai in Amsterdam, was absolutely packed. And it's similar to ICE in that it needs something bigger. You know, it needs something bigger. And, you know, doing it at IXL offers us that opportunity, or offers, you know, a Clarion that opportunity.
When I walk in there, obviously there's not going to be all these gaming machines on display, physical mm-hmm. gaming machines, because it's an online one. Is it going to be mainly, I assume it's going to be mainly B2B suppliers? Or, you know, will there be operators with stands? Who are the exhibitors?
So, well, the operators will have stands in so much as that they have affiliate programs. So, obviously, it's going to be a mix of B2B suppliers and operators, affiliate programs, you know, kind of affiliate technology, that sort of thing. So that's what you can expect at the event.
And there's going to be a big RG area, isn't there? Responsible gambling and...
Yep, the Sustainable Gambling Zone started out as Consumer Protection Zone, obviously has now evolved. That's kind of a key feature of every Clarion show now. Like every Clarion gaming show, I should say. That sort of commitment to responsibility is very much kind of on display. And I think that leads us nicely into the content, because I'm obviously going to flip the script slightly on you here, because...
Oh, hang on, this is content. Don't put yourself down. You answering was content.
I know.
I'd like to also link it back, as the interviewer, I can do this. Talking about the responsible gambling, I believe there is something, you'll be able to tell me what it is better, but some ICE... are launching, Clarion through ICE, are launching some big responsible gambling academic work, aren't they? That I believe your colleague Eva is going to.
Yes, the ICE
gaming in Spain later this week. This week, if you get the podcast out on time, which I will also be. Yeah, yes, Robin, I will also be speaking out, doing a keynote speech there.
Oh, here we go. So it's shameless self promotion.
We're here to talk about
IGB Live, and we've got you talking about your junior panelist slot at Gaming in Spain.
No, mine's a keynote. You know how I said that you told me I wasn't allowed a keynote at any of the Clarion shows, but I've got one at Gaming in Spain. We'll talk about the illegal market, but that wasn't what I was wanting to talk about. I was wanting to talk about the big thing you're launching. I don't know if you know much about it.
The ICE Research Institute. So this is really, well, I mean, there's a lot of material out there about it online, but really it's creating and coordinating the industry response to certain issues. So, you know, we had Mark Flores Martin as our first guest last week, you know, talking about AI, and just kind of touch on that, and I will link it back to the ICE Research Institute, so bear with me. What really kind of came out of that, and I thought what Mark was really good at kind of getting across, is that despite all the proclamations and all the AI will replace a marketing agency, AI will replace a journalist, it's not really known, the impact of AI. You know, it's still to be worked out. There's still a lot of experimentation, and, you know, and just really kind of like research needed. And so something like the ICE Research Institute provides that sort of forum for these issues to be discussed. So I think that's really kind of a key thing that that it can do. It can act as this kind of focal point for the industry. But since you mentioned gaming in Spain, where the ICE Research Institute will obviously launch,
I'll be doing a keynote on the illegal market.
Yeah, and Ed will have a junior panelist slot on the illegal market. I'm sure other speakers are available. Let's just touch on Spain.
It is actually, fair play to William, it is an incredible lineup, not just myself. But they have some great people. There's a big focus on LATAM as well. And they've got the Brazilian regulator there. Hopefully, and we'll do this on another session, talk about Brazil. But I've been doing quite a bit of work on looking at some of the illegal market by looking at transaction data and getting some data off some of the operators. But there's a good lineup. It's not based just on Spain. It's breakout groups of LATAM. I think you've got a couple of other colleagues there, Liliana Costa, talking about Brazil and other LATAM ones, as well as Ziva. And there's a award show, which no doubt you're hoping you're going to get some even more awards in Spain, given the success of ICE in Barcelona. Sorry, I feel I've interrupted you, Robin. Please continue.
Yeah, so that's all right, Ed. Thank you very much. That was alarmingly courteous of you. So on, because you mentioned it, and before we drag things back to the UK and IGB Live, I'm just interested, it's a good opportunity just to kind of touch briefly on the current kind of state of play in Spain, because obviously you've had this period of essentially regulatory kind of snapback. You know, advertising has been, well, let's face it, it was banned in all but name. You know, it wasn't officially banned, but the way it was set up, it felt like it was really, it just made it very difficult to advertise. But then obviously with the court ruling last year, which stays some of the elements of that, you know, de facto ban on advertising, how's that market performing?
I mean, you say there's the de facto ban on advertising, which I don't disagree with in general, but actually if we look at, and I'm just getting data up now, if you look at actually advertising spend, so I mean in 2024, promotional expense, which we class as advertising, I mean that does include bonuses and fairness, affiliates and sponsorships. Let's take off bonuses because that's not really right to do. So that's about half of it. Yes, it was down. So the total promotional spend is 32% of GGR. 2023, it was 32.6%. 2022, it was a lot higher, 40%. And about half of this is bonuses, so you're looking at maybe 20% then, 18% in 2024. I think exclude bonuses. If you're looking at a mature market in Europe, you're probably looking at 20 to maybe 23-24% of advertising as percent of GGR. So the fact that they're down around 20% means it is a bit lighter. Like, without, If we hadn't have had this actual regulated data, you would have assumed that, I don't know, including affiliates, but would have assumed that advertising would have been a lot less in Spain than it has been. So they are still managing to do some advertising even before this ban was overturned, which kind of goes against the narrative of what you think, actually.
That's interesting, because on top of that, Italy, which actually has, you know, obviously there is kind of efforts to potentially lift it, but Italy had instituted a ban on advertising. But even there, in recent years, the market has continued to grow.
Yeah, and I think with Italy and Spain as well, actually, they're two markets that have probably quite strong cash-based economies, big land sector. So despite them having both been open for quite a long period of time as an online market, you actually only need a small amount of revenues moving from the land-based game machine sector, for example, in Italy, to online to actually have strong online growth. So you have seen that. I think, I don't believe there's a legislative change. I don't know if operators are changing how they behave, and this is not saying they are, but one of the issues that Spain had was an incredibly low sports gross win margin for quite a few number of quarters. I mean, when we're saying low margin, I mean, I'm looking and saying fixed odds sports, we're talking 1.4% from Q4 21, 2.1, 2.1, 4.1. So it went for a year, the average margin was 2.1%. Now, the explanation I heard of that, because that's not all just sporting results, the explanation was that Spanish operators are not allowed to effectively turn down or limit bettors. Successful bettors have to be able to put their bets on. And there were court cases around this. Now, whether this changed that slightly, I don't know. But if we look from the last eight quarters, and we don't have the Q1 data yet, it's gone up to 5.7%. So still low compared to what you'd expect elsewhere. But it has had a recovery. You may think, oh, 2.1, 5.7, it's not a lot. Well, just from that margin alone, that's pretty much increased the size of the betting market by 2.5-fold, without without turnover of stakes taken into account. The other one is, you know, like in most markets, the growth, the strong growth being driven quite a lot by live roulette, which is the live product, and that was growing that. But really, despite the live roulette growth, it's still slots, which again are growing. You know, they're the biggest part of the market. iGaming is bigger than sports. Slots are bigger than live, but they're actually continuing to take share, which again goes against this narrative of, you know, live gaming is the growth in iGaming, whereas actually slots is, we say this all the time, same in the UK, we can talk about slots are again still growing quicker than live casino. So I also think that's a bit of a false narrative about live casino being the growth driver.
So that's an excellent on-ramp, to get back to topic after about 15 minutes where we've taken a slightly wild divergence. So on the UK market, so it's been an interesting period on IGB's other far more successful podcast, World Series of Politics. We had Wes Himes on to talk about progress on the Gambling Act white paper, and the government is, you know, kind of slowly working through. I think Wes hits like something like 2/3 of the measure in the white paper have now been kind of implemented or kind of initiated. But with slots, I mean, obviously we now have stake limits in place. So as you're seeing with, you know, kind of Spain and Italy, what's performance looking like in the UK? Is there any kind of indications as to how these, you know, these kind of restrictions are kind of like affecting the market?
Yeah, I mean, it would have been good to have had a heads up. But having a quick look at the model and from my... No, in depth about every product in every 150 markets. No, look, the sample, so we only have actual data until, like, full market data until the end of calendar Q124. Mm-hmm. But we do have sample data from the Gambling Commission up until the end of Q125. And to be honest, that has shown, I believe, at the end of Q1, so there's a bit of a downtick in Q4. But at the end of Q1, the sample data had slots at its highest ever level. Since they started reporting this in March 20. So, yeah, I mean, it is a bit like that, but generally, slots continuing to perform strongly. Now, how that will change, I'm not sure, as more of these kind of measures start to flow through and affordability measures. Mm-hmm. I think one thing we've seen is if we look, and this is not for every large operator, and some have performed well in different times, but had a good results, etc. But generally, the overall market is performing better than the larger operators, at least publicly listed operators that report UK data, which does mm-hmm. suggest that some of the smaller tail, especially in iGaming, 100 brands, whatever you want to call it, are taking share. And whether that's because they're more nimble or blah, 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 or whether it's just because they haven't implemented a lot of these measures around the affordability and all of that as quickly as some of the bigger ones who may have to do it for more reputational and corporate governance reasons, I suppose a bit of a guess, but I know there's a theory around that, that actually some of the small operators who aren't self-imposing some of these restrictions until they become actual legislation have been able to take share. And the question then is, when they start imposing all of these, does that mean that players who have gone from the bigger operators to the small operators are then just going to stick in there because they're in the same situation with everyone, or are they then going to go to the offshore operators where there aren't these measures? Because a lot of people, if they're used to playing a certain amount, they want to do that. And also, quite frankly, if they're spending a certain amount of money and they're happy with that, and someone says, oh, we want to see your bank statement, then it's like, well, no. Now, I know there's going to be frictionless checks and the whole, we talked about the Gambling Commission and the mess about what's affordability and what's coming in. So I don't know on that. But long story short, the UK online market came down again after COVID. You know, as the land base opened up and after some of these affordability measures were put in, it's... You know, it seems to be, at least for a certain set of operators, it seems to be still performing strongly. And, you know, is advertising the next one? I think we were going to seamlessly link this into the Premier League, weren't we?
Yes, we were.
That makes it sound as though we've prepared for this. That is literally the 30 seconds of preparation beforehand where we said, let's talk about football sponsorship.
I mean, 30 seconds is pretty charitable. Say more kind of like 12 to 15, but...
Well, it was on WhatsApp, so I know it takes you a bit longer to type them, so...
Well, I mean, like, I'm working through the reading lessons. The writing ones I'm not doing quite so well on, but I'm getting there, you know.
Are we... Going back to the other podcast, so... Do you reckon the World Series of Politics is the ice of podcasts and we're the IGB Live?
That's actually a very interesting comparison, and probably
We don't have 15,000 listeners, let's be honest. Yet.
Well, the thing is, I'd say we're probably not quite at IGB Live level. Yeah, but that's what we'll aspire to. I mean, like, as we've always said, we're lo-fi, we're indie, we're slightly rough around the edges. We're the bad brains to the World Series of Politics Springsteen.
Yeah, we wouldn't want to be the ice of the podcast world. I think it's just too much pressure. And, you know, we're too busy to start going to award seminars. We do not want to be doing that. Anyway, so back to the Premier League shirt sponsorship that we were briefly WhatsApping about in our non-preparation for the show.
So yes,
I've done a bit of research.
Have you now?
Yeah.
Well, that almost sounds like you're prepared. Oh, all right, you've outsourced, you've delegated the research.
No, I did this one. According to an unnamed website, there are 11 Premier League teams that have betting sponsors on the front of shirt. And it's interesting because by the end of next season, or the season upcoming, so the one that finishes in May, June 26, there will be a self-imposed ban by the Premier League clubs on shirt sponsors from gambling companies. Now, I'm torn between this, whether you should have this or not. Is it irresponsible or not? Because on one side, you look at it, and the rumoured to be roughly around 10 million a year, most of these sponsorships.
Yeah, Everton, 10 to 15.
Yes, Everton, Estate.com, that's maybe 10 million, West Ham, Betway, 10 million, blah, blah, blah. Now, given how much money there is in football, and I know a lot of these clubs may make a loss, but given how much money there is in football, do you not think they could get a non-gambling sponsor for maybe 7-8 million a year? And do they really need that 3 million? I mean, do they honestly need it when, you know, so looking at, I just happened to get this because it came up, so no, not pick on Crystal Palace. Congratulations on winning the FA Cup, by the way. Really terrible to see City lose finals. I mean, it was terrible for everyone involved. But so they've got a 10 million a year-ish sponsorship, okay? Now, their revenue in the end of the 2024 season, so there'll be more at the end of the last season, was 190 million. So if they could get something for a couple of million less, let's say now that's 1% of their revenues. Now, yes, you could argue they made a pre-tax loss of 33 million. But it's like, is it really, you know, should they really be having this when kids are buying football shirts and all that with gambling sponsorship just for a couple of million? When, let's be honest, you're overpaying a shitload of your players. You're just wasting quite a lot of money in various things.
Well,
on the flip side, it's completely legal. So if the laws say you're allowed to advertise on a sponsor of a football team, and they're allowed it, then why should the Premier League club suddenly go, or the Premier League go, we're virtue signaling, we won't do it. You know, the Championship clubs can, everything else, but we're not going to have it. Why should we be having a go that Crystal Palace has a sponsor in on the front?
Well, a few things in that. I mean, first of all, obviously, for the junior shirts, they don't have the gambling sponsorship on them.
Note to self, get better research analysts.
Yep. Yeah, it was like I bought my daughter a Fluminense shirt in Brazil before she was born. She outgrew in about a week. But that doesn't have a gambling sponsor on it. And previously, I think they were Betano, I think they're now Superbet. I mean, I just brought it for the colours. It's kind of red and green. It looks quite cool. But obviously, for juniors, they don't have the gambling branding on it. And I think the other thing, it's a front-of-shirt sponsorship ban. So that's a very narrow, you know, kind of like definition. It's, you know, it's less a kind of like an all-encompassing, you know, kind of like puffer jacket of a ban, a more a gilet of a ban. You know, it's kind of, it's very narrow in focus, you know, just as a gilet is only good if there is a, you know, kind of a cold front going directly, you know, face on at you.
I reckon I've got about 11 or 12 gilets. I love a gilet. Well, they just protect everything that he's protecting, and then your arms are still free to do what they want, like.
Well, your cold arms, your arms, you know, your hands barely able to type, you know, like fingers stiffening up in the freezing cold. But then you think, all right, my chest and my back are warm, therefore I'm great.
It's protecting the vital organs. I mean, we're not going to look. I mean, I'm just surprised that after Tim Sherwood popularised me in the world of football, by the way, I was already wearing gilets for a long time before that. I'm surprised more people didn't continue with it.
Used to work in finance. I thought it was uniform.
Yeah, it's more hedge fundy guys, but yeah. My brother does say that when I turn up places. He's like, oh, you're typical finance stuff. Like,
yeah, finance, bro.
Leather boots, Chelsea boots, jeans and gilet. I'm like, yeah, pretty standard attire.
It's good to have a uniform.
I mean, this is even more random than normal shit we talk about. So let's get back to it. So
yeah.
Your view, should Premier League clubs be allowed to continue after next season having front of shirt sponsors? Or why, just because you're in the Premier League, are they not allowed something that is completely legal?
Well, I can. So, I mean, well, an interest. Another thing I didn't mention earlier is the All Party Parliamentary Group for Gambling Related Harm. You know, obviously a group that's broadly against the industry. I think to say it kind of to almost kind of like downplay the approach. Their view is very much that, well, if you don't have a gambling sponsor, you will get another sponsor. My concern with it is A, you know, it's like to an extent, I accept the argument that it reduced the exposure for children, you know, like, yeah, fair enough. But how does that, it also, I think kind of in a footballing sense, it kind of reinforces the inequality in the whole football pyramid. Because when, you know, these kind of conversations about a potential kind of ban on front of shirt sponsorship emerged, there was, I mean, this is going back years, but where the real concern was within the Championship, because a lot of those clubs run at a loss, you know, some of them have, you know, kind of slightly weird muffled owners. I think there's a club in Sheffield that's currently in dispute with their owners. Kind of like, yes, mid-table
when
side.
They are looking to potentially go into administration, three-window transfer ban, not paying players. The owner seems to have decided will only sell the club for the amount of money he's put in, which is 167 million, where the club's not worth it. So yeah, as a Wednesday fan with a couple of season tickets next season, it's an interesting time.
How do you feel about a League One football?
Look, Championship's the best league in the world, as far as I'm concerned. Premier League, you can stick up your ass. All these prima donna. I hardly watched any Premier League last season. It's just not as exciting. Championship, great league. League One, let's be honest, the quality of football's pretty crap.
It's a bit agricultural, but I mean, like, when it comes to football or soccer, for any American listeners that we may have, I'm not sure, I tend to watch the Scottish Premier League, which is also, it's wildly divergent in terms of the quality of the football on offer. But one thing I would say that I think is quite interesting is a lot of the Scottish clubs have reset their finances in a way that I don't think is really kind of filtered down to England. So, which I think is also why a lot of these clubs are attracting investment from, you know, like Tony Bloom owns Brighton, or the guy who owns Bournemouth and the Vegas Golden Knights, because these clubs have all become self-sustaining. I mean, obviously we've had some notable, you know, collapses, whether it was Hearts going into administration or... I wasn't going to bring them up, but yes, them.
Why wouldn't you bring up the biggest and most successful team in Scottish football?
It's actually not the biggest and most successful team in Scottish football in terms of trophies. It's actually Celtic now.
Is it? Okay, well, let's move away from that.
Yeah, I don't
really know where we're going with any of this.
No, well...
But yes, so moving away from football. So should the Premier League, should they be allowed to still advertise?
So this gets us back to that point. So the issue is, obviously with the Championship, they do require this to keep running as a going concern. When they get promoted to the Premier League, I suppose it's because of the ridiculous... the ridiculous kind of TV money that flows into that league, that people would have to then kind of change their shirt sponsor.
Yeah, they'll put clauses in, that's fine.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, you look at some shirt sponsorships, like you look at something like West Ham and Betway. I mean, that's a long-term, very successful partnership. Like, you feel that is, you know, like, I mean, that's partially down to, I think, how Supergroup operates. I think they treat sponsorship very seriously, and they also look to drive ROI. You know, it's not just about getting their brand somewhere. There really is kind of like a focus on making that work as a partnership.
Been there since 2015.
In 2015, yeah. Yeah, 10 years this year. And obviously you would assume that partnership is going to continue, because it's worked.
Well, oh, you mean, yeah, not...
Yeah, in a different format. Why wouldn't it continue? I suppose that's where some of these other brands, you know, they're licensed through TGP Europe, which is the white label. Obviously, that means a few of them will disappear now that TGP is withdrawing from the UK market. But you don't. These aren't partnerships with the clubs. These are a kind of branding opportunity to create visibility, for the most part, let's be honest, in offshore markets. And
right. We're running over time. Are we going to say anything of interest to people on this podcast?
I think we've actually said quite a lot.
Of interest to people. So talking about football, the Club World Cup, what a load of bollocks. And FIFA, just generally, a load of bollock. Like, who gives a crap about the club? When you've got teams playing against, like, Auckland City, who don't, it's not even a professional football team. They've all got other jobs.
I mean, to be honest, I've not engaged with it. I mean, I think it's...
It's a Club World Cup, and you've got an amateur football team playing against Bayern Munich, or whoever it was they're playing. Like, it's just...
Yeah, it's... I mean, what I think is quite interesting, I did watch a bit of one game, I think it was a Chelsea game. There were no fans. No, it was empty. You know, the ground was it was strange. I think from kind of afar, I think some of the Latin American teams playing the kind of European teams, I think those games have been quite good. Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably the most interesting part, but I haven't watched these games.
So we're tying this, it's nicely being tied back that to how I'm going to perform at the LATAM Media Group sponsored football day then.
Well, before even that, I was going to mention that there is a session at IGB Live that caught my eye. So what was it called? What was it called again? Oh yeah, that was it. Brazil's Regulated Market, 6 months in, How to Stand Out. And now it's interesting here because I looked down at the list of speakers. You've got Pedro Lucas, head of affiliates for Super Afiliados. You've got Eduardo Ludmer, head of legal for BetMGM Brazil. And then who's this? Ed Birkin, managing director. H2 Gambling Capital. So tell me about this.
I mean, I'm moderating. As Clarina made quite clear, the only airwaves I'm really allowed to be on is this dubious podcast. So no keynotes for me. So I'm allowed to moderate, which is why I was trying to get some practice by interviewing you today. I'm not sure I've successfully moderated you today, but...
No, 5 out of 10.
You're giving a little brief overview of kind of the size of the market. Now I've got some tax data that's come out through a freedom of information request, and then the illegal market through some transaction stuff. So I'll be doing that, but it's really about the other people who, you know, Pedro and Eduardo have come over from Brazil and give their view on it. Yeah, I think that it's pretty much going to be split into a couple of broad bits. Is one, how does the legal market stand out from the illegal market? So how do you make sure you get more sure? And then two, within the legal market, how are you able to stand out? And then actually, weirdly, given we've done no preparation, ties back to what we're talking about today is, I think I'm going to ask them to touch on things like shirt sponsorship in Brazil.
That's where interesting.
They spend a lot of money on marketing and shirt sponsorship and stuff in the football teams in Brazil. But how are they able to really kind of make those plans when there's so much uncertainty in the market? I mean, the gambling tax has just been put up. Potentially a... there's a ruling from the Supreme Court that could even rule all of gambling illegal and shut the whole market down, which I think is unexpected. But there's so much uncertainty around things. You know, how are they able to make these investments to kind of stand out? So I think that'll be interesting here. So not because I'm contributing much to it, but I think that will be, because of the others, I think it will be a fascinating session. Yeah, there's a lot of RG stuff looking through. But, I mean, really, I think it is all about PM on the kind of July. And it will be in English for our Portuguese-speaking listeners. I think there is a session from the Minister of Sport talking about maybe the land-based casino bill and things like that in Brazil. But that is in Portuguese, so you'll be fine, Robin, with your Duolingo skills. But yeah, looking forward to IGB Live. If any of our myriad of listeners wants to kind of catch up there, please feel free to drop us an email and get in contact. Robin will be there. I'll be there. Robin's not going to the awards because he wants to go home and look after his child / being banned. So yeah, I think this is our most random podcast to date. And
it has been a grab bag of various different things. We hope we've provided, amid all the divergence and tangents, at least some interesting factoids, whether that's about Italy, the UK, Spain, you know, the kind of shirt sponsorship debate. I mean, all the, you know, like a few of these issues are going to be on under discussion at shows like IGB Live. If you haven't registered, do it now. It's worth it. I'll put a link to register in the bio of this episode. And
how much does it cost to register to go, Robin?
Well, Ed, it's free to register. Yeah.
Wow.
Value. That's what we offer.
I mean, it's like our podcast. We haven't even started charging for this yet.
I think we're quite far away from that. One day.
Subscription. One day. Maybe. And also, I think we don't want to limit people based on finances to our words of wisdom. I think we always want to end up being an open, free to access, free at the point of consumption podcast.
Free at the point of consumption. You know, we're essentially the NHS of podcasts. And on that note, it's definitely time to stop. We have jumped about various things. We will see you at IGB Live, and we'll see you in the next episode. Bye then.